Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, April 2nd, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, we'll get the details about the University of Alaska Fisheries Day at Lena Point. The campus's Mercedes Munoz will highlight classes in First Friday. We'll have our monthly Juno Police Department update with Deputy Chief David Campbell. And we'll hear about First Friday here at KTOO. And Adeline Baxter will preview Tuesday's forum at 360 with University of Alaska President Jim Johnson. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more right here live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 37 degrees here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of Native Americans plan to protest the Cleveland Indians mascot and logo during the baseball team's opening day on Friday. The Committee of 500 Years of Dignity and Resistance plan to march and demonstrate in front of Progressive Field in Cleveland, Ohio. Organizers say the protest is over the team's failure to fully eliminate the Chief Wahoo logo. Earlier this year, Major League Baseball announced the retirement of Chief Wahoo on uniforms in 2019. The group would like the name Indians to go as well. Tribes and national Native organizations are among those involved in Change the Name, Change the Mascot movements across the country, calling on sports teams and schools to drop their Indian mascots and logos. The National Congress of American Indians applauded Cleveland's decision in January. NCAI sent several letters to the league saying mascots and logos like Chief Wahoo impact Native people's self-esteem, especially youth. The Navajo Nation Human Rights Commission is advocating for business-friendly standards in border towns. Commissioners say they're continuing to work to address the needs of Navajo people and protect them from fraud. The commission helped in a recent case against an auto salesman in Winslow, Arizona. Francisco Lerma, a former worker at Tate's Auto Center and Hatch Motor, was recently sentenced to 6 years in jail for fraudulent schemes and is court-ordered to pay restitution to victims. Navajo elders are among the alleged victims. The Navajo Human Rights Commission is working on creating a border town business seal of approval, which commissioners hope will help both customers and business owners. The University of Kansas held a series of events for their indigenous students, including hosting a Native American hip-hop artist over the weekend who inspired students and encouraged them to reach their higher education goals by sharing his own story. Rhonda Lavaldo reports.
Native American fans of Frank Juan filled the Lead Center for his very first visit to the KU campus in Lawrence, Kansas. He has been featured in BuzzFeed, Vibe, NPR, ESPN, and MTV's Rebel Music. Cheyenne River Lakota and KU graduate student Rain Charger says his performance was incredible.
He had really good message. His raps were really like on point and clear. I thought him having a grassy dancing hype band is like a really interesting way to do it, especially in hip-hop. Yeah, it's really inspiring. I hope to see him do a lot more and kind of get a lot more exposure, you know, because I know he'll keep, he'll stay with his native roots.
Juan talked about his songs, what made him write them, and also gave advice for those in attendance who are in college.
Well, I would say, you know, it's a little bit different for Haskell because it's a school made for us, but, you know, a lot of these colonial school structures aren't built for us to succeed, so it's kind of hard for us to succeed. So I would say, you know, like, if things take time or if you got to work really hard at something, don't get down on yourself or don't let that stop you from moving forward. It took me 6 years to get my undergrad. I took a year off from school. I transferred schools, I changed majors, you know, lots of ups and downs. And so I would say, like, you know, don't let the journey discourage you. Just understand sometimes it takes time.
Juan was recently at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, and his group will be on tour throughout the year. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
The American Indian College Fund and Pendleton Woolen Mills are introducing two new blankets. The blankets are designed to honor Lakota leader Chief Sitting Bull. One design is based on Plains Indian art and inspired by ledger drawings, including horse and tracks. The other design incorporates flower and butterfly designs seen on traditional clothing. The blankets are available online and at Pendleton retail stores. A portion of proceeds from the blankets will benefit the American Indian College Fund and student scholarships. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the American Indian Tourism Conference, providing technical resources and education to advance and develop tourism programs in Indian Country. Pre-early bird registration ends May 31st at AITC2018.com. Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 2nd, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes past the hour. Here in the studio now is Anne Beaudreau. She's an associate professor at University of Alaska Fairbanks in the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, and also Ashley Bulwark. She's a grad student at the same place. Welcome to the show, Anne and Ashley.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Anytime. And we're going to be talking about the Fisheries Day out at Lena Point. And I don't know that a lot of people know that University of Alaska Fairbanks is here in Juneau.
Yeah.
Tell us about
that's
that.
That's true. It confuses a lot of people. But we've actually been here since 1987. Kind of originally we became part of UAF because we grant PhDs. So any programs that grant PhDs are part of University of Alaska Fairbanks, but the Fisheries Department actually has people spread across the entire state. So we have people in Fairbanks. Here in Juneau, we've got about 60 grad students and 10 faculty. We have people in Sitka, Seward, Kodiak, Anchorage, and I think that kind of reflects the importance of fisheries all around the state.
Okay. And we're going to be talking today about all of that and also this Fisheries Day, which is coming up on the 6th and 7th, this Friday and Saturday. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we're calling it UA Fisheries Days at Lena Point, and it's really two events that are open to the public. On Friday, it'll be our 22nd annual student research symposium, and that's from 9 o'clock to about 4 in the afternoon, and that's a great chance to hear about all the different types of research our students and faculty are doing. And then on Saturday is our fisheries open house from 9 to 1 p.m. And that's really a hands-on activity-based science exploration. Great for all ages. We've got a lot geared towards kids and families.
Okay. Get your pens and pencils out, listeners. We'll come back to those details here in a little bit. Ashley, you are indeed a grad student in this program. What are you studying right now?
Yeah. So I'm a fisheries degree student. I'm a master's degree student. And I actually don't study what you traditionally think of fisheries. I'm more of a coastal ecology focused student. And so my project is based on Prince of Wales, looking at rocky intertidal ecosystems in particular. So I think that's one of the great things about the fisheries department is that not all of the students study what you think of as traditional fisheries. You know, we have people who are more ecologists, and we have people who are into management. We have more human dimensions and connections to fisheries and some quantitative things. So there's just a lot going on in the department.
In your research, in particular, what is exciting you most right now?
Oh, I love spending 4 months of the year on Prince of Wales and being out in the field in the ecosystem itself and just trying to get a feel for what are the patterns going on there and what's driving changes across a long geographic spectrum. So that's what really excites me about it.
Okay. And what are some things that you're excited about teaching right now?
Oh, well, I love the classes I teach. I teach an aquatic food web ecology class, and that really kind of explores a cross-section of the ecosystem, understanding how species interact and how people affect that. But I also teach a science communication class, and I think that one is especially meaningful to me because it gives students a sort of firsthand practice with communicating with the public about what they do. So in a non-technical way, trying to get rid of the jargon.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So it starts on Friday. Remind us again what you're going to be doing that day.
Yeah, Friday is the Student Research Symposium. And this is the 22nd year it's happening, which is really exciting. We usually have members of the public show up, but this year we're hoping for even more. And basically, people will get a chance to hear grad students talk about their research. And this, as Ashley mentioned, you know, this spans from kelp aquaculture to humpback whale behavior, attitudes of whale watching, whale watch passengers towards regulations. So there's kind of that human dimensions of whale watching. There's talks about sea otters, salmon populations, predator effects on salmon. So it's kind of a bit of everything.
Okay, and remind us what time it starts and exactly how to get there.
Yes, okay, so it starts at 9 a.m. It goes throughout most of the day, and it's at 17101 Point Lena Loop Road. So the listeners might be more familiar with NOAA. You might have been there for Sea Week or Ted Stevens Day, and so we're co-located with NOAA. So you go through the NOAA gates, and then we're the first building on the left.
All right, so that's on Friday starting at 9 a.m., April 6th. Ashley, I understand you know more about what's going on Saturday?
Yeah, so Saturday is our fisheries open house day, and this is our first ever open house. The building's been around for quite a while, but we've never had a public open house event. And so it's a great day for people to come out and enjoy hands-on activities, and that's going to run from 9 to 1 on Saturday. And it's sort of a drop-by event, so people can come by any time with their families. We welcome adults as well and wander around the building and meet a bunch of the grad students and faculty members and get a more hands-on look at what they're doing for their research.
And what ages would this be appropriate for?
All ages. Yeah, there'll be everything from touch tanks and fun arts and crafts activities to more involved looks at specific research topics and critters of interest. And so I think just about everybody would enjoy coming out and seeing what we're up to over there.
And what might surprise our listeners about your program? What do people not know about the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences?
Besides that it's in Juneau.
Right.
I think Ashley really hit on one of the main points, which is that we really study, you know, not just fish, but people, you know, fisheries, aquaculture is really a growing industry. There's a lot more research on that now. We study, you know, everything in the food web from the algae and the zooplankton, the baby fish all the way up through crabs and whales and things. So I think that's a pretty exciting aspect about what we do. And we also work really closely with the fishing industry. Many of our students graduate and work for the industry, or they work for state and federal agencies. Actually, about 45% of our undergrads who have graduated since 2007 have gone on to work for state and federal agencies. So we're really giving back to the state in terms of fisheries management and science.
Okay. How about from a student's perspective, Ashley?
I really love the program. I've lived in the state of Alaska for a number of years, and when I wanted to go to grad school, this was the ideal place to be. I mean, I love Alaska, and we know that there's a strong fisheries everything fisheries in Alaska, and this is really the only program that's really well known across the country for fisheries in Alaska, and so it's really cool to be a part of that program and that there is such a diversity. There's a lot of great faculty that have a wide variety of interests that you can work with, so that's been really exciting.
Among others, I could see high school students, I can see undergrads coming out this weekend and really getting a feel for what you all are up to.
Yeah, and we're always looking to make connections with those students. I mean, many of our labs are looking to hire especially undergraduate technicians and things like that for our field work, and we try to have undergraduates throughout the school year working in the lab and things like that. So definitely a lot of ways to get connected.
Okay, Fisheries Day out at NOAA, or the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences at University of Alaska Fairbanks. The address again, please, Anne.
17101 Point Lena Loop Road, right here in Juneau.
Yeah, starting at 9 a.m. on Friday and 9 a.m. on Saturday as well, right?
That's right.
If people want more information, where can they get that?
I think probably the easiest place is your website. I think you've listed our event there.
Okay.
And it should be on Juneau Empire Community Calendar as well.
Okay. Anything else either of you would like to add?
We're just really excited for the two events coming up and excited to share what we do with the community.
All right, that's the voice of Ashley Bulwark, and we were also talking with Ann Beaudreau. You can meet them this Friday and Saturday out at NOAA, University of Alaska Fairbanks College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. Thanks for coming on the show, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 2nd, about 20 minutes past the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Mercedes Munoz. She is the director over at the Canvas Art Studio. Mercedes, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, here we go. First Friday for the month of April. It's
yes.
That time again.
Yes. Coming up quick, artist Dean Guanelli will be exhibiting a body of work titled Pattern and Patina. That's a grouping of sculptural three-dimensional pieces made out of found objects, all from the Juneau area. Mostly Douglas is where the Douglas Beach is where he's finding his objects, and there's a really beautiful mix in his pieces between organic and geometric shapes. He uses a lot of bent and weathered metals with wood accents as well.
Do you think most of these will be hung on pedestals? Where, how do you see the gallery looking?
I think it'll be a mix of both. Okay. Yeah, we have some plinths, and they'll, you know, depending on the size, some may stand alone and some may hang.
All right, and he's calling it Pattern and Patina, is that
yes.
right? And it opens this Friday. What time do you usually get going at the canvas?
4 p.m.
Okay.
Or, excuse me, I'm sorry, 4:30.
About 4:30.
4:30 to 7 p.m. And another thing that I wanted to mention about this show that is particularly cool is that Dean is donating 100% of the proceeds raised to the canvas, which is very generous of him. And it's going to, you know, create some great opportunities for us and go back into the quality arts programming that the canvas offers. So, you know, those funds raised are going to go towards quality materials and visiting and local instructors and things like that.
Okay, I'm looking at the card for the show. It looks great. Interesting stuff. Some copper pipes of different size there with various oxidations on them. Fish-like wood spring thing.
Yeah, they're very, very unique and beautiful. And yeah, my favorite part is just the mix between those organic and geometric shapes, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
It's very neat. But I look forward to seeing it all put up. And yeah, it should be a fun, different show.
And that'll be up through the month of April, I imagine?
It will be, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So besides First Friday, what's going on?
Well, let's see. We have some classes coming up. We have an oil painting class with canvas instructor Daniel Todd, and that's going to be starting on the 9th, so that's coming up pretty quick. That's a four-week class, 3 hours each session. You'll learn the basics of oil painting. We also have a beginning wheel throwing class starting tonight, and we still have some spots left. So if you're interested in that, that's with our studio manager, Alex Botello, from 6 to 9 tonight. So we still have some room in that one. And then we've started this every few weeks. We do a one-day workshop with local artist Patty Hutchins-Jupy. She had a show at the Jack a little while back. Anyway, she's been doing like a different topic for each class. So the next one we have coming up will be April 19th. And so stay tuned. Follow our if you follow us on Facebook or Instagram, we will mention that class coming up, or always call the canvas. We can tell you more about that. The other fun class thing we have coming up is we have our summer classes planned, our kids' summer classes. We try to get that out as soon as possible because we know that parents are looking for things for their kids to do during the summertime. So we have that schedule all planned. We have a wide variety of classes for kids of all ages, and we are going to be releasing that to our email followers starting tomorrow. And if you follow our emails, there's going to be a special discount in there for a limited time. So if you don't already receive our emails, you can go on our website and a prompt will pop up for you to enter your email, and you can get on that list and get that coupon on classes.
Thinking of the summer classes for kids, do they tend to be day camp style, where they come and hang out with you all day, half days? What do those look like?
It's really up to the kids and parents. We offer, so each class is a week long. So it'll be Monday through Friday, either 9 a.m. to noon or 1 to 4, depending on which class you choose. And we definitely have kids and families that decide to make it an all-day camp. And, you know, they can take a break for lunch, or they can have lunch in the Canvas Gallery. We definitely have a lot of kids do that, and then take a morning class and a different afternoon class, or kids that just, you know, see one particular class that they're really interested in and stay for that one. So we have a wide variety of fun classes, pottery, drawing, some outdoor classes, so lots of fun things, jewelry. We've also had a lot of interest in classes for younger kids. So we are offering one class for ages 5 to 7, and that's going to be a graphite drawing and painting class starting in June.
Okay. There's that class, ages 5 to 7. The rest of the classes, what age group would you say they fit best?
They will all be ages 8 and up. Otherwise, the only other one is the wheel throwing, and that's just for strength. You need a little bit more strength for that, so that one's 9 and up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then otherwise, you have oil class. Oil painting starts on the 9th, so just next week, I guess.
Yeah.
Wheel throwing starts tonight?
Yes.
Wow. And then another one on the 19th. Sounds like fun. If people want more information, Mercedes, where's the best place to find it?
You can get our printed class schedule in person. You can always feel free to call. Our program assistant, Glorimar, is always fantastic about promoting the Canvas on social media, both Facebook and Instagram. So that's probably the best way to follow what we have going on. Also, you can always check out our website, too, for updates.
In the meantime, we should come down at 4:30 this Friday to see Dean Guinelli's show, Pattern and Patina, right?
Yes. And then just one other thing we have coming up, we're participating in Empty Bowls, too. It's going to be a great fundraiser for the Glory Hole, and we have a goal of 250 bowls that we are hoping to contribute, and so we'd love the community support making those bowls. It's always more fun if we get people involved, so we will have a free studio night this Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. If you have experience throwing, feel free to come in. All materials are provided, and help us make some bowls for this great cause.
Sounds good. Mercedes, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, that's it. Thanks so much, Scott.
Thank you.
There I was. Looking at the art teacher, I was just a girl then. Never have I loved since then. He was not that much older than I was. He had taken a class to Metropolitan Museum. He asked us what our favorite work of art was, and never could I tell him it was him. So I wish I could tell him. Oh, I wish I could have told. executive company has all this heaven been done.
Listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 2nd, 2018. We're right at the bottom of the hour, and now in for our monthly update with the Juno Police Department is Deputy Chief David Campbell. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you here. What's going on down at the police station, sir?
Well, a lot of things, as always. We do have things that occur typically throughout the course of the year that sometimes are affected by the seasons. One of the things that we're dealing with right now is it's almost springtime. I know the snow last week might think that it's still winter, but you know, I think spring is around the corner. I haven't heard anything much from Juneau, but I've seen some reports out of Anchorage on their news stations that you know the bears are waking up. So just a good reminder for people that as bears are up and about to really pay attention to the ordinances that we have surrounding you know, garbage, basically garbage storage and garbage collection, just to avoid a bear becoming a garbage bear at the beginning of the season type of a thing.
Also makes me think of studs on our cars. The time
absolutely.
To take them
that
off,
was
right?
The other thing I had on my list right here, too, is April 15th is the stud day. Studs should be removed by April 15th, which is kind of nice because that coincides with federal tax day.
Yeah. Why is it that we should take our studs off?
It just helps protect the roads. I mean, they're great when there's ice on the roads because they dig in and give you better traction. But when there's no ice on the roads, it really does a lot of damage to them. So if we can keep our roads as good as possible before we have to go through the resurfacing, it's just the fiscally responsible thing to do.
And what happens if you do have your studs on and get pulled over?
Well, no promises, but typically we start off by giving people warnings. You know, I mean, if it's the 16th and you get pulled over with your studs on, you know, chances are you're going to get a warning. It's up to the officer discretion. But as the time goes by, the likelihood of a warning goes down and the likelihood of a citation goes up. And it could be as simple as taking the studs off and coming to the police department and showing us that your studs are off, or there could be a fine depending on the circumstances around the traffic stop.
And if you made really bad choices, kept your studs on forever, your car might end up at the vehicle auction. Right?
That's right. Nice segue. Very nice segue. I like that. Yeah, another thing we have that we're in the midst of is we do have vehicle auctions a couple times a year. Our next vehicle auction is going to be basically on Saturday, the 21st of April. So the impound lot is pretty full right now. We usually auction off about 60 cars. It varies because people can pick up their cars before the auction, and we're going through the notification process right now. So on Saturday, April 21st of this year, we will be having our auction. It's over on La Perouse. There's a lot over there that's owned by the airport that we lease for the auction purposes. The exact address is 9390 La Perouse. The auction starts promptly at 9 a.m. It's an outcry auction. You have to register ahead of time. At 8 a.m. is when the doors open up for people to come register. And then however long it takes for the auctioneer to get through all the vehicles, usually I'm done by about 10 o'clock.
Wow, it's quick.
Yeah, it goes really, really quick. And there is a viewing also. If somebody wanted to go view the vehicles on April 18th, which is the Wednesday before the auction, at the La Perouse lot from 11 to 1 is the viewing time. And then also you can just go online. We have all the vehicles that are subject to auction at this point in time on our website. So if you go to junopolice.com, you'll notice in the bottom right-hand corner there is a little picture of a car that says vehicle auction. If you click on it, they'll have all the auctions listed. We don't have photographs at this point in time, but we are working on getting those photographs uploaded on the website.
60 cars. How did most of these come to be in your possession?
For a variety of reasons. Some of them were left, you know, derelict on the side of the road, and they don't necessarily meet the state definition of a junked vehicle. If it's a junked vehicle, then we're allowed to dispose of it. If it doesn't meet the state definition of a junked vehicle, it gets impounded. And we try to contact the owner, and if they are, you know, negligent in coming and picking it up, then after a certain period of time, we're allowed to auction it off. It might have been we stopped the person and impound it for whatever reason, you know, maybe a DWI, maybe driving revoked, something along that lines. But, you know, the people do have to pay the cost of an impound, because, you know, the city doesn't have their own impound. So we have a contract with a private contractor. So every time a tow it happens, there's a cost involved. And people always ask us, hey, will you waive the cost of this tow? And it's like, well, no, because it's not our cost that we waive. It's an independent business that's doing this. And there's also storage fees. So if a person doesn't get their vehicle out in a timely manner, you know, the combination of those two things can rack up pretty quickly. So we usually drive about 60 vehicles. The last auction we had was in November of last year, and it went by pretty quickly, and we're looking to have one again here on April 21st, and then we might even shoot for one in May, near the end of May as well. But for right now, we're gearing up for the one in April.
It sounds like you're the auctioneer.
I am, yeah.
What's the coolest rig you've seen in your time doing this?
Well, last year we had a Corvette. We had a boat last year. We had this like early 80s Chevy Malibu, and when you look at it from the front, it was like, oh, it was such a cool car, because, you know, I went to high school in the 80s, so I'm kind of a child of the 80s. But then when you got up to it, it was a station wagon, and it was like both the coolest and the ugliest thing I'd ever seen, all in one car just wrapped up, you know.
Have you seen this year's batch?
I've looked through them a little bit. Yeah, I don't remember exactly what there is. They come in a variety of conditions. Sometimes the cars don't auction off for very much. Sometimes they go for a couple $1,000s. It really depends on what they are. The minimum bid, we usually start at about $100 a car.
All right. So, again, there's a viewing on April 18th, but the auction itself is on the 21st of April.
Correct,
right?
Which is a Saturday, yeah.
And I bet you'll have all this on the Juneau Police Department Facebook page, right?
We will be making an announcement on Facebook, yeah. But if you go to our regular website, which is JuneauPolice.com, we have a little icon where you click on it, and it'll take you to our own website, and we have all the cars listed individually.
Okay. Annual report.
Yep, the annual report is something that we always strive to get out every spring, and basically we go through all of our crime statistics from the previous year. So even though it's the 2018 annual report, it will be covering crime statistics from 2017. And we give all of our statistics to the FBI, to the federal government, through a process called Uniform Crime Reporting, or UCR. And we have definitions that the federal government uses, so we report things like, you know, how many burglaries were there, how many thefts, how many assaults. And it's pretty interesting because it kind of gives you a snapshot of the year on how we were statistically as a community for our crime. The past couple of years, we've seen some really significant increases. In 2015, it was about a 39% increase in Part 1 crimes. In the next year, in 2016, it was a 24% increase. So it still went up, but not to the same extent it was before. We're looking at a little over a 6% increase last year.
So the increase is decreasing, if you will.
Correct. But if you compound over the last 3 years, it's a pretty big increase over 3 years. So there's definitely, you know, some concerns out there. I was on the mayor's task force for public safety, and I think that his initiative to try to address some of these issues came out of this increase in crime that we've seen over the past few years. So we're in the process right now of looking at all the numbers, you know, trying to figure out, you know, why these things are happening, and then trying to make some suggestions.
And you mentioned burglaries is what these kind of crimes sort of are.
Correct. Yeah. So what happens is UCR came out in the 1930s when the federal government decided that they wanted to track how communities were doing. So they have very specific definitions of, you know, what is a burglary, what is a simple assault, what's an aggravated assault, things on that line. And so then we have people at our police department who look at all our cases, identify which cases they are based on the federal guidelines. Because just because we say from the state of Alaska's perspective it's a burglary, it might not meet the federal definition of a burglary. So we do a quality control check through, which usually takes a couple months to make sure the whole year was done. And then we report to the state of Alaska, who then reports to the feds.
And we've talked a lot about that on this show, just about how to decrease these kinds of burglaries, with common sense, talking to your neighbors, making your house visible. What's the acronym for getting ready the trees and stuff?
Yeah. I'm just watching you talking with your hands. It's very entertaining because I have sat in this chair and talked to you. I know. That's why I verbalized it because I thought it was good because I could see the wheels turning in your head.
It's Monday.
Yeah, you're right. I have been here a couple of times talking about it. The acronym is called CEPTED. And that stands for Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. It's different from target hardening. Target hardening is things like, you know, chain link fences, deadbolts, you know, security cameras. And what we recommend is kind of a combination of the two. I mean, you should have really good deadbolts in your house. You should have, you know, strong windows and things that, you know, make it harder for someone to access it. But then there's also things that a person can do with their physical environment that just gives that sense of, hey, someone cares about this. There's some territoriality going on. There's a sense of surveillance going on. And what the studies are showing is that these oftentimes help prevent crimes because the criminals then end up going to a different place that's a little easier target.
I also learned recently that you have a thing called Vacation Watch.
We do. Yeah. If you go on vacation, you can call to the police department and tell the dispatcher that you want to register with Vacation Watch. And the way that works is we don't guarantee, you know, oh, on this time and this date we're going to go look. But we have a briefing book, and every shift when the officers start, they look through the briefing book and they see things like, you know, who are the current, you know, runaways, who has new warrants out, and where are the extra requests for extra patrols. And one of those extra patrols are people who want us to visit their houses when they're on vacation. That we don't go inside the house, but we will drive by the house. Maybe if you want to, you know, walk around the house in some cases, depending on what the request is. And we just try to have a little bit better visual presence in the area and know what's going on in the houses so that, you know, people can have a little more sense of security while they're gone.
That also reminds me of the you've communicated to us before about neighborhood beats, how you have
Geographic policing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what happens is we have four teams. So we've divided the city up into four geographic regions. So if the officers are in a situation where they're doing, you know, proactive extra patrols, they can look and they say, oh, you know, I'm a Valley officer, I'm a Douglas officer, and they can look to see which houses are part of that Vacation Watch and make it a point to swing by them when they have a little bit of unallocated time.
All right. We've been speaking with Deputy Chief David Campbell. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you guys for your monthly update. Is there anything we're missing or anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I think it's exciting that springtime's coming. Just make sure you don't put your trash out before 4 a.m. on the day of pickup.
Thank you, sir.
All you want is for someone to speak. You the jacket is a armor, as are the heavy boots on her feet. So many hours spent walking along desolate streets. She finds comfort in the way the apartment building slowly passed by. Cold, hard copies of each other, and telling her to jump is the only way to fly. Only way to fly.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 2nd, about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. My guest now is Adeline Baxter. She is the education and youth reporter here at KTOO Public Media. We're going to be talking about a forum at 360 here in the KTOO building tomorrow at 11 a.m. With Alaska University of Alaska President Jim Johnson. Adeline, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. How did this show come to be?
UA President Jim Johnson has been really pretty aggressively trying to get the word out this year on the university's budget. The university has faced, a lot of budget constraints, just as everybody in the state has the last couple of years. So there are a lot of new developments in addition to that the university has right here in Juneau. The new UA School of Education will be kind of getting off the ground. They just announced the new head of that school, and that's a really pretty big opportunity for UAS, since they are going to be sort of the nexus of that project, and the goal of it all being really to increase the number of teachers throughout the state and kind of address this teacher shortage that is affecting a lot of the country, but especially Alaska.
Okay, so budget, teacher shortages, and teacher training. And you're also putting sort of crowdsourcing questions, right?
Yeah, we wanted to make this an opportunity for not just UAS students and maybe even faculty, but everybody in Juneau's education community and in Juneau to come and weigh in and ask questions. It's going to be, a Q&A format. We're hoping at the end of the session it'll be me and President Johnson going back and forth for a bit, but then we'd really love to have community input. So if anybody isn't able to make it, it will be broadcast later on 360, but they can also tweet at me at Adeline Baxter or send me an email, adeline@k2.org, to just let me know what burning questions they have about the state of education in Alaska, higher education, the university's budget, the Strategic Pathways Initiative that's been kind of controversial in the past with cost-saving measures, and anything that's bugging them.
Okay, so this is tomorrow, Tuesday, at 11 a.m. here in the KTOO building, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what time should people get here?
I would say get here maybe 5 or 10 minutes before, get yourself a front row seat.
Yeah, and you think it'll be about a half-hour program?
That's what we're planning on, yep.
Okay, and like you said, it will later be available on 360north.org and broadcast statewide on 360 North Television. Tweet to Adeline at Adeline Baxter or email her, Adeline, adeline@ktoo.org.
That's right.
If you have questions for University of Alaska President Jim Johnson. Thank you for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add, Adeline?
No, that's really it.
All right, thanks. See you tomorrow.
Thanks.
don't need your love like I used to. Let me be alone. I can see your future, and it's telling me I've got to let you. How can I prove that I care? If I could choose, I'd be there. I've got my own life.
You're listening to Avery Stewart from his March 1st concert at 360. Avery's going to be playing this Friday as part of KTO Public Media's First Friday Art Show. We're really excited. It's called Folk Life, and here in the studio to help me tell you all about it is Annie Bartholomew, arts, culture, and music producer and KXLL director, and also Christy Chambor, the regional director of development for Coast Alaska. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hi, Scott.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so this is going to be happening First Friday here at K2, huh?
I'm so excited. I haven't been this excited for a First Friday in a long time, since our last really awesome photography exhibit.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how this come to be, Annie. Where'd the idea come from?
Well, we love Folk Fest here at KTOO, and we were just thinking, how can we bring together these kind of collective memories that we have out there? And we did this really cool show of staff and volunteer photos in December, where we just hung them up, very low-tech, and we just thought we'd open it up to the community of Juneau and see what kind of photos people had on their hard drives or their film. So we put it out there and asked people to send us in their photos, and we got some really incredible shots we're super excited to share.
Okay. And that's this Friday, First Friday. It opens at 4:30 here in the KTOO building in the Willoughby Arts District. But there's going to be more than Avery Stewart playing live music and more than the photos, right, Christy?
That's correct, Scott. We will have an unveiling of a new kombucha from Alaska Probiotics, which we're really excited about. She's currently on tap at several places throughout town, but this will be a very special keg of kombucha that she'll be opening here for us to celebrate the First Friday. She's a great partner. And also Pucker Wilson's will be here, I believe. He's whipping up something very special to complement the kombucha, so it'll be interesting to see.
All right. I think a lot of people know where Pucker Wilson's is, right over here in the Willoughby Arts District.
Correct.
As well.
Yeah.
In front of the Jack. Do you know where she's operating out of for Alaska Probiotics by chance?
I'm not sure where her main base is. I know that it might be Auk Bay, actually.
Okay.
But I know you can get her on tap at Copa, and he does kombucha floats over there.
What?
Yes.
That's a thing?
It's a thing, babe. It's a thing. I believe Rainbow Foods also has her on tap, and there's several other locations throughout town.
Locally sourced kombucha.
Yes, like organic, sustainable, locally, all the good things, all the good things.
Very cool. Annie, you've seen a few of the pictures coming in as we get ready to hang them this week. Anything that surprised you or made you excited about?
Well, our first photo submission that we got from Wes Adkins was called Boot on the Bridge. Cinderella lost her boot on her way to or from Folk Fest, just this big thigh-high zip-up boot. Alone, lost. And that was like, you know, we didn't want to limit the photos just to the main stage or just to downtown.
Sure.
It's really folks' interpretation of what, you know, Folk Fest is to them. Greg Capito sent in a nice photo out of a plane window shooting the approach to Juneau. And then we've got some really nice throwback photos. Cam Burns has one of Sipek that's really special. And then just all over the place, Don Jupi submitted some of the dancing girls. Ryan Cortez has some really beautiful ones backstage. One was like a screenshot from a video, but just really captures the experience and the fun of being part of this festival that takes forms in so many different places here in our hometown.
And I was surprised, too. I like how a lot of our photographers are honoring the tech and the backstage stuff. There's pictures of, you know, the stage managers and the tech people working with microphones and mic cables and people running the board. Then some historical stuff. Barbara Pavitt gave us some great old pictures of Bob Pavitt and So it's all over the place. Pretty neat cool. Show this Friday, folks. It's free here at KTO Public Media. Doors open at 4:30. Kombucha live music from Avery Stewart, Parker Wilson's. Artful photos from years of Folk Fest. What am I missing? What else is there?
Just good times, Scott. No better way to kick off the Alaska Folk Festival.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing we're missing are the listeners to come on Friday.
Come
right?
on down.
Thanks for coming on the show, you two.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Avery Stewart, he'll be playing this Friday here at KTOO Public Media for our first Friday Folk Life Photo Show. Come on down. Doors open at 4:30. I'll be your host again on a Juneau afternoon tomorrow. Please tune in. The weather forecast for tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies with lows in the mid-20s. East winds to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, Tuesday, cloudy skies, highs in the mid-30s. East winds still at 10 miles per hour. And going into Wednesday, calls for mostly sunny skies. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon.
And I really don't mean to be rude, but I'm trying to find some time for myself. There's not enough for you.